You're listening to Chaos on the Set, a chaotic TV and film review podcast. Today we are breaking down probably the biggest movie of 2023, and we have two of your usual hosts here today. I'm Shruti.
I'm Kate.
And we also have one of our favorite guests coming back to talk about Barbie with us. Lexi, how have you been? And thank you for joining us again.
Hi, I'm feeling pinktastic. I'm so excited to be back.
Ooh. If you guys don't remember, Lexi was our guest on a few different diary movies.
She was on for The Princess Diaries, where we got very chaotic, if you remember that episode. And she was also on for Bridget Jones' Diary, and then breaking down all of the drama that went on with Don't Worry, Darling. This movie is less dramatic. This movie is more just joy, and I'm happy to get into the joy with you guys.
Would you think that Barbie keeps a diary? Probably now, right?
I don't know if Barbie, currently in the real world, Barbie probably keeps a diary, but in the, I feel like journaling and keeping a diary is like a mental health aspect that we do in our real world. But in the perfect Barbie land, I don't think Barbie would feel the need to be that self-reflective. So I don't think Barbie keeps a diary.
Yeah, for sure. America Ferrera's character Gloria would, but not, not Barbie.
She has a diary. She definitely keeps a diary. All right, let's go a little bit more global on Barbie, not just whether or not the characters write in Barbie journals. Lexi, let's start with you. What was your, did you watch Barbie opening weekend? What was your experience? How did you feel about it? Give us the whole shebang.
Oh, yeah. I was able to secure, like, one of the blowout, like, screening tickets from, like, that Wednesday before the, like, actual premiere. It was super fun, packed house, even people like sitting on the ground. Like, I don't even know how that happened.
I've heard these stories. Wait, how is that possible?
What theater was this? Was this AMC or was this an Alamo?
No, this was an AMC, 34th Street in the Dolby Theater. Cause I was like, I want to get the best screen experience ever. Cause you know, Nolan took up all the IMAXs. So yeah, it was like a packed house. Like, just the energy was booming, super fun screening.
And everyone was okay with people sitting on the floor.
Just had to be okay with themselves type of thing. It wasn't, like, a huge pack of people on the floor, but, like, there were a couple where, like, a woman brought a picnic blanket. I'm like, did she plan for this?
What?
Like, I don't know.
That confuses me how they oversold tickets to a movie theater.
I don't think they oversold. I think these people were sneaking in.
Yeah, maybe they bought like a ticket to something else.
Yeah, that's what you do.
No, I don't. I've never snuck into a movie in my life. What are you talking about?
So did like the whole like get a group, let's dress up, go. And then I saw it again, I think 2 weeks later on a Sunday. So I was like, okay, there are definitely a lot of parts I probably missed just in audio and dialogue that I need to like see again. Mm-hmm. But both times I just remember like smiling and like when a movie makes me feel a certain way that I'm like, oh, I really want to do this and this is what I want to achieve. I just like cry like from the beginning.
I feel that so hard.
And like this one had me crying from the beginning because I was just like, Greta Gerwig, like you queen. So I really enjoyed it. I'm sure we'll get into it more deeply, but like it was just fun and like what blockbusters should be, and it's crazy that I was able to hit so many demographics and be such a cultural phenomenon without it like crashing and burning and having so many people turn on it. I feel like it still kept really good momentum, which was amazing.
Yeah, Jane saw it, my mom, yesterday, literally, quite literally went yesterday, and she loved it.
I'm honestly surprised at, like, I knew it was going to be big, but to be so big that, like, people could not find tickets on a Wednesday afternoon to go the weekend after it came out, like, that really surprised me. I'm happy for it, and I think it was very crowd-pleasy, and for that, I respect it, but I will say that, for me personally, it felt a little bit overhyped. I think that I just had very high expectations for the movie going into it, being such a huge Greta Gerwig fan. Like, Lady Bird and Little Women did make me cry because they were both so good and for the same reason, Lexi, that I'm like, oh my God, how amazing would it be to make something that is this profound and resonates with so many people and like on a very deep emotional level. Whereas I think Barbie was deep and emotional, but it was also very surface level feminism. And on my first watch, I was like, oh, is this what we're getting into? And we can get more into like the nitty-gritty of it all and what feminist commentary it's actually making. But I will say that on rewatch, I liked it a lot more. And I think in my first watch, I was just expecting a whole different kind of movie and a little bit of I don't want to say a deeper movie, because the movie is deep and it does get into complicated issues, but it just felt a little bit more surface level than I wanted it to, and then I've seen Greta do that I was slightly disappointed. But on rewatch, I was like, okay, I see what it's doing here, and I respect it.
That's interesting that you were expecting something like Little Women deep for Barbie because of Greta, because I think, like, just because of the marketing and everything I was seeing for months and months and months leading up, and then I think also coupled with the haha Barbieheimer like memes, I just wasn't expecting something that was gonna be like super groundbreaking and profound. I kind of saw it as like, wow, this is gonna be like just such vibes, such you know, pink, we love to see it. I thought it was gonna be very campy, obviously. I don't know. I was seeing it as like a, this is just going to be a fun blockbuster summer movie.
And that's what I loved most about the movie. Like, I went to New York to see this movie. I didn't go to New York to see the movie. I went to New York for my sister's birthday, and it happened to be also Barbenheimer weekend. So her birthday was Saturday of Barbenheimer weekend. We watched Barbie Friday night and did a little sister sleepover afterwards. And then on Sunday, we did an Oppenheimer matinee. And going, like, the energy of, like, just when I flew to New York Thursday, everybody at the airport, everyone on the seat next to me, when I was walking to my sister's apartment in New York City, everyone was talking about Barbie or Oppenheimer or Barbenheimer or what they're doing this weekend or what their kids' movies plans are.
Yeah.
And it felt like Game of Thrones levels of everyone in the world is talking about this thing. Like, my old boss texted me saying, hey, what are your Barbenheimer plans? Like, people were coming out of the woodwork to check in on me because it was such a big opening movie weekend. And I love that. Like, I love when content sparks conversations and connects people to the point where, like, everyone in the theater were just saying, hi, Barbie, to each other. And it was a party and it was a vibe. And, like, I'm happy that we had that experience at the end of the day, even if the movie didn't resonate with me to that level, you know?
It was wild that, like, even weeks after the opening weekend, too, like, because I feel like the cycle of, like, movie going is so short now because people either just like lose interest or they're like, oh, I'm gonna wait for it to come out on streaming. And people were still dressing up to go to screenings with groups of friends weeks after on like a Tuesday. Like, I was going to Nighthawk, which if you're in New York, it's like a smaller owned like dine-in theater type of place. And I was going to see like some indie movie, and literally like just groups of women in pink.
Yeah.
Like, walking in at 7 p.m. on a Tuesday. I'm like, well, I know where they're going. And it's crazy that we're, like, going into the next
Shortcomings. We went to go see Shortcomings at least three weeks after Barbenheimer opening weekend on a Monday evening. And I made a friend in the bathroom, as I always do, because I like talking to people about what movies they're seeing. So I said, hey, what'd you go see today? And she said, I did Barbenheimer. And I said, today, like on this Monday evening, you did Barbenheimer? She was like, yeah, I had time today. So she went alone to the movies and watched Oppenheimer and watched Barbie. And I was like, I respect that so much. People that don't really go to the movies saying, I'm gonna go sit in a movie theater for 5 hours this weekend for the bit. So we did record a podcast in honor of Barbie before Barbie came out on The Truman Show, because it was one of the reference points for Barbie. And we did a couple long-term bets on that podcast on what Barbie would be about. And I was dead wrong on all of them.
Kate cleaned up.
Kate cleaned up. We're going to play a short clip of just how right Kate was on this podcast.
Wait, here's my bet. I actually have a serious one.
Okay.
Will Ken end up being evil?
No.
Which Ken?
I think Ken, like, Ryan Gosling Ken.
I think Ryan Gosling Ken has to be a himbo.
I think Ryan Gosling Ken is going to act like a himbo the whole movie, and then in the end, you're going to find out who's actually evil.
I feel like I was half right with that, because I tried to say I thought it was going to be, like, a twist ending where he's himbo, 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 and then he's evil, but really, it was like, he's himbo for a short time, then he discovers patriarchy, and he's like, this is amazing, and then he became evil, but then he turned good again at the end.
But you can't argue, like, we were discussing after the movie about whether Kate was right or not, and I'm like, anyone that says Ken isn't evil is probably anti-feminist, because you cannot bring the patriarchy into Barbie land and then say, no, Ken was fine.
But yeah, I remember telling people that. I kept telling people before it came out, I was like, I bet Ken's gonna be evil, and they're like, there's no shot. Like, they're not marketing him like he's evil. And I'm like, that's the point. They're marketing him like he's good. He's gonna be evil. And then he kind of was.
Like, I feel like if it went, like, the full feminist with a capital F, like, route of, like, yeah, he could have been, like, full evil, full-on, like, antagonist. But I do think, like, Greta does just about, like, do a balance of, like, letting him be an antagonist without it being, like, black and white evil, so to speak. Like, I feel like there's multiple things that are, like, layered into what becomes, yeah, you know.
Yeah, I agree.
Obstacle for Barbie to come across. And I don't know. And then, too, like, he's himbo, but then also they introduce this term of Kenergy, which I do think there is a difference between Kenergy and himbo, and I'm still doing my research on it, and I will come out with a piece soon, but yeah, I can see.
Lexi will be writing a thesis on it. Oh,
trust me, I am working on it. It's the Himbo Summit. It's a big history of cinema that I love. But yeah, I did notice that, though. Like, they did kind of hint just with some, I think it was in the I'm Just Ken, like, song or something, like, mm-hmm. that kind of gave it away that, yeah, maybe he does, like, have a little bit of, like, a darker turn in the movie, but it's nothing, like, crazy, but, yeah. I can see that, though.
They did try to go feminist, but then tried to, like, not go full feminist by scaling it back with, I think, kind of addressing the issue of, like, you know, Barbie has all these amazing professions, and, hey, you don't have to just, like, you don't have to be a superstar all the time. You can be just normal Barbie who's, like, trying to pay her taxes and, like, trying to get by each day, right? And then similarly, they address Ken by being, like, you don't, your only profession isn't just beach and, like, look good. Like, you can actually achieve more, and you're more nuanced than that as well. And, yeah, I think they did a good job addressing both and then kind of, like, redeeming the Kens in the end. Kind of, though. It really wasn't fun of them to bring patriarchy to a non-patriarchal world.
I think, honestly, that was a little bit of why I was a little bit just kind of taken back the first time I watched the movies, because Ken was marketed as being so superfluous and not critical to the plot that then when he was critical of the plot and it became a very much analogy for our modern day society where there is a patriarchy, and then in the Barbie world it's like the opposite, and they were literally just representing gender dynamics and then swapping them, like just doing like now patriarchy is in Barbie land, and then they kick the patriarchy people out and then they bring the Barbies back to power, but they don't really comment on equality at all, like now the Barbies are in power again, you know, and
they joke, they're like can we be on like the Senate or on the Parliament, and they go, you can have like one like small court judge.
Yeah,
I do wish that they made it more equal on that. I was like, well, that's kind of mean. What?
Exactly. Like, especially on my first watch, I was like, so what is, you're not really showing a solution for equality right now. You're just kind of doing a fun movie. And then on my second watch, I'm like, yeah, were you really expecting Greta Gerwig to solve feminism in this movie? Come on, no. Shruti. Like, cut her some slack. And so, and especially when on second watch, you pick up on things like them saying, like, yeah, the equality in Barbie land is going to represent the real world, except with men in lower ranking positions and women in power. What I don't like about it, though, at the end of the day, is, like, still painting, like, oh, if you just put women in power, like, girl boss feminism, like, we'll all succeed and everything will be good and everyone will always be happy, which isn't true, and I wish they commented on that a little bit, you know? That things won't be perfect just if women rule the world.
What do you mean? They would be great! No, I was kidding.
There is a clip that I got of Margot talking about how Barbie is actually not feminist, which made me feel like, okay, I get what they were doing here, and made me like the movie more. Let me just play this really quick.
I actually, when I got asked the other day, like, is Barbie a feminist? I was like, well, she's actually like the level up from that, because if you look at Barbie Land at the beginning, like,
yeah,
the Barbies are on top and the Kens yes. are kind of disregarded. So I was like, well, that's not equal.
No, right.
So
right,
whatever
right.
the opposite of misogynist is, actually, right, right. Barbie's like, so yeah. towards the end yeah. when yes. they balance yes. things out, then it might be feminist. But actually, right. it's like beyond feminist.
But then
the power dynamic is in the favor of the Barbies to begin with.
Exactly.
So they do acknowledge that they're not solving feminism. You know, they acknowledge that this is an imperfect system and this isn't actual equality, which makes me feel better about
yeah I don't take. Think they ever also tried to like solve feminism in this film, and I think there were some very vocal critics Ben Shapiro that thought that that's what they were trying to do,
yeah,
and got so incredibly upset
yeah.
that he burned Barbie dolls on camera.
We don't have to waste our time thinking about that. I do want to talk about, though, like, America Ferrera's speech.
Oh, God.
How did y'all feel when she says, being a woman is so hard, you know, the critical speech of the movie, which was literally printed word for word, like, in the LA Times, I think after the movie came out, but still, like, this was the showcase of the movie. This was the climax, right? This was the speech of the movie. This was the Little Women. Women have hearts and minds, but there's so much more speech of that movie. How'd y'all feel about it?
I mean, I will say that was a bit of the low point of the movie for me.
Because I feel like I've heard that speech before. I feel like I've literally heard online discourse slash, like,
I'm not bossy, I'm the boss. We've heard it.
I've heard it before. And when that was, like, her big speech and all the other Barbies were, like, in awe of her speaking, I was like, we know this already.
Yeah, it seemed that's where it did seem a bit too, like, on the nose. Like, this is for the inspiration of, you know, young women thing. I'm like, but... And, you know, I feel like the rest of the movie did pretty well with, like, a show don't tell with that. And, you know, again, it's not all about women being, like, feminism isn't about women being in power. Like you say, it's about equality. And it's, like, showing that we have just as much flaws as the men and vice versa. And, like, but we can also, like, rise to the occasion as they can as well at sometimes. But, like, whatever. Like, there's a whole breakdown of that, I'm sure. But, yeah, no, that speech just really... That's the part where, like, on a DVD, I would skip.
My least favorite scene, too, like, what I thought was even more cringy than her giving that, like, two-minute speech was when they start going to all the other brainwashed Barbies, and she just starts going, you can do this, but you can't do that. And they were like, I'm me again. And I'm like, are you fucking serious?
That bothered me. Yeah. It bothered me that there was, like, the critical solution of the movie to deprogram these women was to talk to them. Like, maybe that's supposed to be a revolutionary idea in that, like, if we all just talk to each other, we would understand feminism. But I was like, really? That's how you're solving the,
like,
movie?
I wouldn't have minded it if, like, with the talking thing, if they had gotten to them and they were like, trying to remind them of their accomplishments. Like, you are, like, a president, and you've signed this into law, or, like, you're an astronaut, and you did this, like, a year ago.
And she does. Barbie says that to the other program Barbies at one point, and it doesn't work.
Which is, like, that, I feel like that should have worked to, like, remind them, like, no, you're not just, like, someone to just serve, like, men drinks or, like, laugh at their jokes or whatever. Like, you can do that if you want, but you can also do so much more. And I just didn't understand, like, her explaining the flaws of the patriarchy was what broke them out of the patriarchy. I mean, I guess it kind of makes sense on paper. But
yeah, it makes sense on paper. But for a movie where you want to see, like, dynamic plot, it just didn't deliver.
Because the rest of the movie was so, like, dynamically plot heavy. Yeah. So.
And just to add some light and praise on the movie before I get more into things I didn't like. I think the way they define the rules of the world to be like, this is how you get from Barbie Land to the real world. It always starts with roller skates. Like, they have very specific rules of the world, and then they also don't take it too seriously. Like, when America Ferrera's daughter is like, do giant hands come into Barbie Land and play with you? And Barbie's like, no, that would be ridiculous. You know, like, they're laughing at themselves, being like, yeah, none of this really does make sense. And I think they did an expert job defining things and then also not taking themselves too seriously.
Oh, for sure. It was super fun. And, like, I think that's where, like, camp elements come into it. And then also, too, just, like, how they're able to technically pull that off. Like, my ultimate, honestly, favorite part of the movie was just, like, the craft and the production design and, like, costuming. Like, that is hands down ultimately, I think, pushed it over the edge for me and made it more special than just, like, a run-of-the-mill adapted off, like, a property type of movie, because, like, that's where you do see, like, Greta's, like, care and, you know, passion coming into play of, like, her paying, like, those details of, like, wanting to pay homage to, like, the set musicals from, like, the 1950s and, like, bringing in, like, the practical effects and, you know, all that stuff. Like, that's where it truly, like, pushed me over the top of, like, okay, I'm truly seated and I'm committed, because they gave that much care and thought behind the scenes to make it look at least, like, a step beyond just CGI junk. If it was any, like, CGI extra mess, I would have been, I think, more disappointed with it.
No, I think it was the practical effects and the sets that you're talking about are there's so much care in it. And what I love in addition to that is that Greta would have these, like, they would call them, like, they had Barbie sleepovers where they would, like, all hang out together. And then they would also have something called movie church where, like, every Sunday they would screen a movie about that was an inspiration and they would talk about it. And, like, to think about, like, all of these, like, sorry to, like, hate on men, but, like, there are male directors that are like, this is my art, this is my craft, I know what I'm doing. And, like, they make brilliant movies, but it's so internal and personal and one man making an incredible thing, where Greta was like, no, this is all of our movie and I'm bringing you into my inspiration so you all know what I'm seeing and let me know how you're inspired and, like, let's make this movie together as a joint effort. And it literally every night was a Barbie party because of the way she handled her set and inspired people. And I just, God, I would kill to work with her.
We were at the IMAX screening and they had some, like, behind the scenes bloopers and stuff, which, like, were cute, but my favorite thing was every time they panned the camera over to Greta just, like, doubled over laughing in her director chair or just, like, talking with Margot and talking with Ryan. And just, like, she seems like such a warm but, like, also just, like, including person. I would have loved to have worked on that film. Oh my gosh, to be a fly on the wall of the Barbie filming.
All right, after that praise, I just want to get negative again for a second.
Okay, we're going.
I want to talk about Midge, and I specifically want to bring in my friend Rochelle's comments on Midge, because I thought everything she said really resonated with me about just, like, how motherhood was treated in the movie. She said, America Ferrera can monologue about moms all you want, but I clocked how pregnant Barbie, Midge, was the butt of all the jokes and kept in the background for the whole movie. Greta was literally pregnant while making this movie, and you're going to have motherhood as a theme and still make the one pregnant Barbie the butt of jokes and nothing else? There was so much minimization of motherhood, marriage, etc. in Little Woman, and look, I get it. It's not and should not be the path for every woman, and we should not champion that at the expense of other women who do stuff either. Mothers and child-free women are not enemies. They are comrades, and it really frustrates me that it was painted this way. And there are other commentaries I've seen about other female identities that were kind of just thrown into the movie but not really commented on. You know, there is a Barbie that uses a wheelchair, and it was kind of, there's comments from the disability community that were like, okay, so you're just gonna put a Barbie in a wheelchair in the movie but not give her a single speaking line. Like, and again, it's a 2-hour, it's less than 2-hour movie. We didn't expect it to solve all of the issues of intersectional feminism, but I did want to bring those discussions to this podcast because it is important that we still mention it.
It is frustrating, and I wonder if, like, a way I kind of saw it was that they discontinued, like, Mattel actually discontinued Midge, like, the doll, because I don't know why. Was it not selling?
It was actually discontinued because people were scandalized by it. They thought it was promoting teen pregnancy and making motherhood look cool.
Interesting.
Canonically also, guys, I'll actually make you guys guess this. Who knocked up Midge?
Isn't it Alan?
Alan.
Yeah.
It is Alan.
Yeah.
But Alan is so...
Alan knocks up Midge and then just abandons her to be a single mother.
Yeah.
and then they reworked Midge, like, 10 years ago to be, like, Barbie's friend and not actually have a connection to Alan and stuff. No, I did read that Alan knocked her up in, like, what, the 70s?
Well, they got married in the 90s, too.
I wonder, because, like, I see that... Okay, yeah, obviously it seems like they were trying to make motherhood, like, a butt of a joke, which is, like, not great. Because they have this whole kind of speech where, like, you know, Margot goes, well, like, I just want to be, like, regular Barbie who's just, like, struggling day to day and just doing her best. And it's like, okay, then, like, then also motherhood Barbie shouldn't be put to shame, too.
Yeah.
She's not, like, an astronaut or president or whatever. But then I also wonder, like, was this a joke? Was this Mattel basically trying to, like, joke about the fact that they had discontinued Midge originally? So they were kind of, like, having all the other Barbies kind of go, like, oh, Midge, ugh, like, because she was discontinued. I don't know if that was them trying to joke about their own past history as a company.
And they do point fun at other discontinued Barbies that are, like, but they were like, who thought this was a good idea? A Barbie with a TV in the back of their back.
Right.
I was like, actually, that seems really cool. I would play with that Barbie, but okay.
Since you are screen obsessed.
Or growing up Skipper.
The thing was wild.
I cracked at that because, well, one, I have just a backstory about Skipper with just a weird college one-off thing. I can maybe go into it later. I don't want to waste time on this, but I was... I wanted to see more of a Skipper. I was like, I wish they could have cast someone funny to be Skipper, because I feel like that character is also very funny. But with the Midge thing, though, I'm like, I'm just trying to think back. I feel like it was more, I didn't take it as a dig towards motherhood. I just took it as like, yeah, just poking fun at the fact that why would they come out with a pregnant doll aimed at children? Like, that is kind of strange to me. Like, and they discontinued it. I didn't think they like harped on it as much as say like Weird Barbie. Like, it's not like they made Midge the Weird Barbie. Weird Barbie was the one that got like flexed out to no end. Whereas like Midge, I feel like was only poked at twice, and one of them was in the song, like, intro, right?
Well, let's,
like,
not also forget that they start the movie with a scene talking about how for so many years young women or young girls only had baby dolls to play with, and they had to pretend to be mothers. Mm-hmm. And then Barbie came along and changed all that. So if you want to argue further of like, it seems like they're not really care about motherhood in this movie, then I guess it's like, yes. But then I would argue, like, they do care about motherhood, because then they have America Ferrera's character trying to reconnect with her daughter.
Yeah.
So, like...
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's, like, a gray area. Like, I think you can argue, yes, they were kind of, like, dissing it a little bit, but also they were just trying to show that there's so much more besides the motherhood aspect that you can also do. I don't know.
No, I get that. Doesn't seem to matter what I do. I'm always number two. No one knows how hard... We would be remiss if we talked about Barbie without talking about how it literally blew up all of the box offices. I mean, when I went to see Barbie opening weekend, I went with a group of 6 people and they didn't even count us. And I think it's just because it was so sold out. Why do they care? You know, everyone has their seat. Like, they don't need to make sure every single person is accounted for. The marketing was also ridiculous. I mean, I think a huge part of Oppenheimer's box office was Barbenheimer. I think people would have gone to see Barbie either way, but the eventization of both definitely contributed to it. They said there's a stat that Puck News found where they interviewed people and found that 6% of people who saw Oppenheimer did so because Barbie was sold out. That's kind of interesting.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny.
And they also did strategic marketing where they weren't just marketing to women, right? Like, they put a 90-second ad for Barbie in Game 7 of the NBA Finals. And so I think that they were smart in the way they marketed and definitely poured so much money in brand campaigns and all of that. Like, Warner Brothers did do a good job. But at the end of the day, I think the internet and the Barbenheimer and the memification of it all, that's really what blew it all up.
I couldn't go anywhere.
No pun intended.
Two months.
Do you want to talk about Lexi's joke and how funny that
was? Wait, I don't get the joke.
I said blew it all up. Like Oppenheimer.
Oh, no.
Okay, we can cut that out.
Spoiler alert, there's an explosion in Oppenheimer. Spoiler alert.
I feel like I couldn't go anywhere for the entire months of May and June without hearing about Barbie, someone talking about Barbie, seeing Barbie in advertisement. Like, they painted a house in Malibu pink and made it a dream house.
Honestly, the most annoying thing for me was when we were doing our Truman Show podcast and I Googled Greta Gerwig as prep, and then Google started splattering pink paint all over my screen. And I was like, well, I can't even Google Greta Gerwig without getting pink splatter. Like, honestly, it kind of started getting annoying. Were you guys annoyed at all?
It was everywhere.
I mean, it didn't hurt, like, obviously, but it was kind of annoying.
It's just, like, it's crazy because, I mean, now I, like, kind of am able to observe a side of marketing for my job, which I've never done before. And it's like, all the like work and thought that goes into this stuff months, even sometimes a year ahead, like, it's crazy. So it's like, but I think I heard somewhere where Barbie, like, the marketing team at Warner Brothers, I think, had like 15 set like partnerships, right? And then because those started to blow up and getting a lot of traction, companies then were reaching out to them saying, hey, we want to partner with you. And I think that's how it really spread. So it wasn't all them reaching out to everybody and seeing what stuck. It was like they had a solid core 15, which also is a lot, I feel like. And then it like spread like wildfire. But yeah, no, it was just like the integration and just like seeing it in real life of things and like people wanting the merch and people wanting, like, I think it honestly started when set photos dropped and people wanted.
Yeah, that I am Kenuff sweater is like $65.
It's wild. And so, it's also really fugly. It's fugly. It's so fugly. I know someone's going to look in the closet 2 years later and be like,
it looks okay, warm.
Okay, well, parkas that don't look like sherbet ice cream are also warm. And we are adults.
I remember the day, like, I was on Twitter the day that the promotional, like, character posters dropped.
Oh, my God, being like, yeah.
Oh, like,
This Barbie is
and then he's just Alan, and like people like circulated those so fast, and there were like hit tweets after hit tweets of those posters, and I just couldn't go anywhere without seeing them. And then people started making memes of them and putting other things into those kind of like posters, and it was just fucking everywhere.
Warner Brothers did originate the This Barbie Is Blank campaign, so you gotta give them credit for that. That wasn't just the internet, but a lot of it was.
It just took over. I mean, I printed out the, like, I'm Just Alan poster, and I have it up on my, like, work desk, which I'm like, oops, competition, but also, like, I don't care. It's iconic. Yeah. I love it.
Lexi does not work for Warner Brothers. We won't tell you where she does work. Yeah, but it's not Warner Brothers.
You could probably find,
and it may have been tied to Oppenheimer. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, a little bit true. Which I just want to say, me being a person that I am not the demographic for Oppenheimer, and I did see it because I felt like everyone was seeing both. I was like, I have to have an opinion on it. So
I mean, Christopher Nolan is so lucky. For people who don't know, Christopher Nolan always likes to release his movies in the summer, and so he was planning on releasing Oppenheimer on July 21st. His former home is Warner Brothers. The majority of his previous movies were Warner Brothers movies, including Tenet, and then when Warner Brothers decided to put all of their movies on streaming, straight to streaming for a year, or day and date, they would stream and go theatrically the same day, Christopher Nolan freaked out, said Warner Brothers is the worst streaming service ever, pulled his business, set up Oppenheimer with Universal, and then Warner Brothers comes along and says, hey buddy, we're gonna open on the same weekend as your opening. Ha ha ha!
Oh my God.
F you.
And they did him a favor.
The nicest thing they could have done for him. Like, truly, they made him so much money.
I don't think Oppenheimer would have made as much if it wasn't definitely Barbenheimer. Not. Yeah.
A 3-hour historical drama in the middle of the summer? Nobody would have seen it.
I mean, do we want to get into box office?
Yeah, let's do it.
It's crazy how much Oppenheimer made, but it's even more crazy that Barbie made how much more Barbie made. All right, so we like to do a little box office segment when we usually cover new-ish releases. And since Barbie is the, you know, biggest grossing movie of 2023.
Is it? It's higher than Mario?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
It passed Mario recently. So we wanted to...
Is it the IMAX that pushed it over?
That's a great question.
No, it was before IMAX.
Okay.
It passed before IMAX. I've been also following this. Than me.
No, I appreciate it. Sorry. For people who don't know, I don't understand numbers at all. Don't tell my boss. But anytime we do a box office segment, I'm like, you guys take the reins. Because what is $1 million? What is $2 million? It's all the same to me.
No, it's actually hilarious. Oh, like, sometimes we'll have been, like, in, like a movie or, like, in a crowded room. And then I'll ask Ruthie, like, how many people do you think were in that room? And she's like, I don't know, 10? And I'm like, there was like 100.
Anyway. I can't conceptualize numbers, okay? You have to tell me numbers in terms of how many football stadiums.
It's girl
math.
That's
how I conceptualize numbers. Like, how many football fields is this? How many football stadiums is this?
It's girl math, Ruthie.
It's just girl math. It's okay.
Yeah.
Love it. Go Barbie.
Okay, so I'm going to kind of go over some figures to help contextualize how much money Barbie actually made and how it did versus other releases that came out this year. Plus, I also included the second highest grossing movie for a female director in this list as well, which Shruti already knows it. I probably shouldn't have told her before.
That's okay.
But Lexi, I'll have you guess that movie in a little bit if you want to play a fun game with us.
I would be happy. Yes.
So Barbie made, at this current time of recording, it's made $1.4 billion in the box office. And it recently passed Mario, which made $1.36 billion in the box office, which still fucking irritates me that Mario made that much, but that's a story for another day. If we're going to get into domestic opening weekend, Barbie had the highest domestic opening weekend movie of this year at $162 million. If we're going to compare that to Oppenheimer, which was its buddy that opening weekend, Oppenheimer made $82 million versus $162 million. So I like to say that only one out of two people saw Oppenheimer with their Barbie. So not everyone did the full Barbenheimer experience opening weekend.
But also Oppenheimer is double the runtime of Barbie, so yeah. It can only make half as much, basically.
Yeah. And then for first week box office, Barbie made $258 million in its first week. Oppenheimer made $127 million. Mario, in its first week, made $202 million.
Wait, so sorry, give me Barbies again.
$258
Oh, wow. Okay.
$202 So Barbie actually really kind of killed Mario there. Oh, and then for opening weekend, sorry, Mario made $146 million to Barbie's $162 million.
Wow.
Do you want to know? Wait, sorry.
The thing for me is that, like, I believe genuinely that Barbie was so successful not because of the IP. Like, I think it was successful because of the marketing. I think it was successful because of Greta. I don't understand who are like, yeah, we need to now find other toys and IP to make movies off of. I'm like, that's not why this movie was successful. You know what I mean?
You mean studios? You mean studios? Because I think every other audience person is like, please God, no. We don't need that. No, did you see the memes where someone was like, oh no, Greta Gerwig became her own Oppenheimer to like the toy adaptation movies or something?
That is funny.
Because of Barbie's success, now that everyone else is like, now we gotta adapt a toy. And I'm like,
was that?
No,
was
we don't. Like, we've already been doing
it. Was the last line from Oppenheimer where it's like, remember, what does he tell Albert Einstein?
Something more important. Dude.
I think
Oppenheimer rips. I'm sorry.
What does he say to
It's
him?
Like, so the end of Oppenheimer is, you know, they cut to the scene between Oppenheimer and Einstein where the conversation you didn't see in the beginning of the movie. Mm-hmm. And Einstein says, like, were you worried that dropping this bomb would start a chain reaction to set the atmosphere on fire? And I believe we actually did. And then the score, bam, bam, bams, and the credits roll, and you're like, oh, fuck, this movie rips.
So Greta Gerwig, like Lexi said, did that with the toy.
Yeah, she started a chain reaction that cannot be stopped.
Because now...
But also, the strike might have dampened it a little bit, which...
Yeah.
The strike sucked, but also maybe, thank God. Like, maybe that caused some people to, like, wait, actually.
You know that Mattel's gonna do probably a Hot Wheels movie.
If you watch the Barbie and IMAX, like Kate was saying, there was extra credits at the end and bloopers and stuff, and there's one blooper where they're like, what's Barbie's ending? And Will Ferrell is like, what other Mattel properties can Barbie date? Thomas the Tank Engine is single. Do you want to date Thomas the Tank Engine? It's very funny.
Yeah, there's going to be so many toy movies.
There's a Barney movie in development.
Okay, can I just say...
Did you hear about Polly Pocket?
Polly Pocket is already a series, though, so I don't hate on them.
I know,
because I have a friend that writes on it, so I actually support Polly Pocket.
Guys, I played
with Polly Pocket. No, but do you know who's directing it?
Who? Who's directing
it? Do you know who's directing writing it? Who? Oh, you don't know this.
No, I don't know this.
Lena Dunham.
No.
And Lily Collins is supposed to start. That's why I'm like... Polly Pocket.
Emily in Polly Pocket.
It's nothing against Polly Pocket. It's
guys, what, Polly what Pockets, to make it. I played with Polly Pockets over Barbie.
I thought Polly Pockets were more fun.
I was a My Scene girl. I'll write the My
Scene. Did they have My Scene dolls, though?
My Scene.
Wait, what was the box office question?
Oh, my box office question to you. Sorry, I never really finished the segment. What is the second highest grossing film directed by a woman?
Oh, yes, I know this. Frozen 2.
Wow!
Yeah, you're right. Frozen 2, I'm shocked by this number. Frozen 2 made $1.45 billion in the box office.
It was pre-COVID though, right?
Yes, it was like 2017. Yeah. But that's...
No, it was after we graduated.
It was after we graduated?
I remember going to see it
I thought it was 2019.
Friend. Yeah, it would have been 2019.
Oh, really? I didn't see it.
I think it was like Thanksgiving 2019.
Oh, it was 2019, I'm sorry.
So just in time for COVID, honestly.
But it was, like,
it was most of that revenue. I think it was like 70% of that revenue was international. It was not domestic.
Oh, interesting. Barbie had some issues internationally because of the stupid map, but
oh yeah,
we don't have to get into that.
Insane. Yeah, no.
But yeah, so Frozen 2 is the second highest one. Well, actually, Barbie has not passed that number yet. Wait, I'll tell you if it has. Actually,
oh, it's like projected to pass Frozen 2, but it hasn't passed it yet.
It technically hasn't passed yet. It's like 20 million away,
guys. You and your 20 million friends all go to Barbie.
I would like Barbie to pass Frozen 2.
Yeah, Frozen 2 is not a
it was
good
just,
well,
it
I
was
feel like that's
okay.
Why they did the IMAX push. I think yeah. That's why they did the IMAX push to, like, get that those numbers. Although I feel like the IMAX push came too late. Like, if IMAX happened a month ago, I feel like...
Yeah.
And also they were able to do it for two more weeks. But again, Nolan had the chokehold over all IMAX theaters. Like,
for only 3 weeks, though. So Christopher Nolan had a monopoly over all the IMAX theaters in North America for the first 3 weeks after Oppenheimer came out, which really pissed more than Barbie off, pissed off Tom Cruise, because Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1 came out the weekend before Oppenheimer and was only in theaters for 1 week.
He can chill. He had Top Gun Maverick last year.
Choosing to put that movie out a week before Barbenheimer, and then after Barbenheimer sets, not moving it was such a weird decision.
Almost as much of a dumb decision as putting D&D a week before Mario.
Well, that was out of their control. They had to move it because of Creed 3, but you can listen to our Dungeons & Dragons Honor Among Thieves podcast to get into that. But yeah, I think if Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1 came out in August, it would have made so much more money, but I don't work in distribution.
Oh, because it was such a dead month.
Yeah. I didn't see it. But I just moved to LA.
It's also 2 hours and 45 minutes.
When I wake up in my own pink world, I get up out of bed.
Before we adjourn, we're going to really quickly touch on the Oscars, make some long-term bets on whether or not this movie will get nominated for an Oscar or certain Oscar categories. So ask you guys a series of questions. Also, you, dear listener, can also play along with us, make your Barbie long-term bets. Just go to tinyurl.com/Barbie bet. We'll put the link in our show notes and also on our socials so you can play along with us. And then we'll touch back when we talk about Oscar nominations in 2024 on whether we're right or wrong. So first question, will Barbie get nominated for Best Picture?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I say yes too. Mike and Jesse, our Oscar experts, also said yes. Will Barbie get nominated for Best Director?
Yes.
Yeah.
I honestly don't know.
She doesn't.
I think
the Academy's going to get so much fucking shit because they did nominate for her Little Women, and that was so bad.
Mike has bet no. Jesse has bet yes. If you look at Gold Derby right now, she is not a front runner on most lists. Most lists have Nolan for Oppenheimer, Martin Scorsese for Killers of the Flower Moon, Yorgos Lanthimos for Poor Things, Jonathan Glazer for Zone of Interest, and Justine Theroux for Anatomy of a Fall. Barbie is on some people's lists, and I do think, and then we have Alexander Payne for The Holdovers. So those are like the top six directors, I would say. Cora Jefferson and Ridley Scott for American Fiction and Napoleon, respectively, are also kind of being discussed. But again, I would say Barbie's in the top seven. I don't know if it's in the top five to actually get nominated for Best Director. That said, we were just talking about how the look and the feel was of the movie had so much care, and all of that comes from the director. So I think it would be a shame if it didn't get nominated.
Wait.
I'll bet yes.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to win.
Yeah,
I don't think it's going to win, but I would say it would get nominated. I would be shocked because okay. It's like... They do, even, like, from, even taking, like, gender out of it, just from a blockbuster standpoint, they do normally credit the blockbuster, like, champion a little bit. Like, oh, no, did Cameron get a director? Actually, Cameron, I don't think, got a director nom for Avatar 2, did he?
I'm checking.
Avatar the Way of Water, James Cameron did not get nominated.
But he got Best Picture, and then he didn't show up. So maybe it could be one of those where they only give it the Best Picture and not Director. But then
yeah.
I'm sure you're going to go into the next few categories where I do think it could pick up. So I'm like half and half on Director.
Yeah. I think that...
I could see how it could go either way.
I think that it's definitely getting nominated for Picture with 10 movies. Like, if it doesn't, that'll... honestly be a crime with how much movie it made, but director is probably the biggest crapshoot. Moving on, screenplay, yes or no?
Yes, for adapted. Because I think if it's based off a character, it goes under adapted, right?
So there, that's a little bit confusing. It's currently listed on Gold Derby as original, and it was submitted as an original screenplay. But according to our Oscar expert, Jesse, the Academy might not agree with it and might still make it submit under adapted.
Yeah, I don't agree with that.
That said, it will be original under WGA guidelines.
Interesting.
Hmm. Okay.
So I'm just saying screenplay. We're not going to get into the nitty gritty because I don't want people fighting me being like, actually got nominated for adapted.
But I can say yes.
Best actress, yes, no. Yeah. Okay. Best actress, yes or no?
Oh, yeah. Actually,
I think no.
Actually, wait. Sorry. For adapted Margo. Screenplay, yes. For okay. Margot, I think maybe not.
Best actress is the most crowded category this year than all years that I can think of. Lily Gladstone is going for best lead actress instead of supporting for Killers of the Flower Moon, which she should, but she's up against Annette Bening and Naiad. Emma Stone is like the talk of the town for Poor Things. It is tough because she won an Oscar so recently. People might not want to give one to Stone. Tiana Taylor is being talked about for 1001. Greta Lee is being talked about for Past Lives. Carrie Mulligan for Maestro. So there's like all of these assortment of movies. I think it's going to be too tough. I don't see Margot getting nominated. I mean, Margot is a producer of the film. So when she gets nominated for Best Picture, she'll still have that nomination, and I'm happy for her because Margot Robbie is who made this movie. Like, Margot Robbie sought out Greta Gerwig and put all of the care into and talked to Mattel about getting all of these things that Mattel would be nervous about over the finish line. So I do believe she deserves an Oscar both for the feat of producing this movie and acting in this movie, but I don't think she's
I think this was another one I was leaning on, and I think, well, not Oscars. I could definitely see her getting nominated in, like, Golden Globes, and I don't mean that to be a dig, but Golden Globes is definitely more of, like, we want this person to be seated in our award show, so, like, she would be a shoo-in. But, I agree. I think it's too crowded, and, like, she did a great job, and I think she is Barbie. However, just in how I feel like that category typically goes, it wouldn't really swing her way.
Supporting actor, do we think Ken, our favorite Ken, Ryan Gosling, is going to get nominated? So just to give you, here are the top positions. Robert Downey Jr. for Oppenheimer.
Yes.
Robert De Niro for Killers of the Flower Moon. Mark Ruffalo for Poor Things. Those three, I'm confident, will get nominated. The other ones, you have Charles Melton for Maybe May December, you have Coleman Domingo in The Color Purple, you have Willem Dafoe also in Poor Things. There's a holdover supporting actor nominations, but it's kind of a crapshoot. And I do see Oppenheimer men cannibalizing each other because you could see Matt Damon getting nominated. You know, there's a lot of other good supporting performances besides Downey in Oppenheimer. So I think that clears the road.
I would just be so irritated if, like, I love Ryan Gosling, if he got nominated for Barbie but Margot didn't.
But it's different categories and different competition. Like, you can't really be mad that supporting actor is easier than lead actress.
And I will say he did, like, in terms of just, like, actual character and, like, acting, I do think he just, like, I don't know, he had fun with it. And he did make that character his own, because Ken could have been a totally different, like, Ryan Reynolds, like, annoying. Mm-hmm. And I feel like he was still able to add a flair to it, where, especially now hearing you list out the potential contenders, I'm like, I could totally see him sneaking in there. I mean, whether or not the Academy is hip enough to do that, we'll see. But I honestly wouldn't be shocked if he was able to slide into a supporting actor there. I do hear, though, just not relevant, but I do hear Charles Melton is definitely a shoo-in for a nomination as well for that movie.
Oh, good to know. Okay, so then we have four locks.
Yeah.
And one open spot for our little Ken.
Maybe.
I do think, I agree, Ryan Gosling did a great job. And also, I think he did a great job marketing the movie. Every interview he did, I think. Not that you get Oscars for marketing, but
the fucking, like, the part of the movie I died at the most was when she's like, I want to be, like, your long-term, temporary, distant girlfriend again. And he goes, 1 second. And he walks away and he just goes, Sublime!
And that was improvised.
And they did film a lot of alts for that, too.
So funny.
Yeah, no, that part makes me cry.
Right, this is my next category. This is not nomination. Will Barbie win production design?
If it doesn't, I'm going to set something on fire. Like, it better.
The other front runners are Poor Things, Oppenheimer, The Color Purple, Maestro, Killers of the Flower Moon, Napoleon, and Asteroid City. I think this has to go to Barbie.
I think Barbie should win. I don't think Oppenheimer should win because it's just explosions.
I mean, it's literally not.
Yes. Is it CGI? They didn't.
Well, no, I mean, it's literally not just explosions.
No, yes, it is.
If a song from Barbie gets nominated, which song will get nominated? Mike said Dance the Night. Mm-hmm. Jesse, our Oscar expert, said I'm Just Ken, which I would love to get nominated, but I'm going to bet What Was I Made For? Billie Eilish has already won an Oscar. It's an Oscar song. I could see the ballad being performed on the stage in my head. Like, that's what I'm...
I want Dance Tonight, and I want them to do a whole dance number at the Oscars on stage.
I hope they do.
Okay, that's in line with what I wrote down, because to be fair, I honestly, like, What Was I Made For? I don't have downloaded onto my phone. I have... Pink, I have Dance the Night, I have the Pink Panther song, Angel, what's the other one? Oh, yeah, and then I'm Just Ken. I think there could be a potential split of I'm Just Ken and one other song.
Yeah.
Because there have been times that they nominate two songs from a movie. I could see that happening, and then they perform a medley.
Oh.
I could see that great. Happening.
I don't know. It's just Dance the Night is, like, the big one that's, like, I guess the What Was I Made For is trending a lot, too.
I hope they, like, start the ceremony with a Barbie song. Like, that would bring everyone...
I just want Dua Lipa on stage just being like, woo, you know?
A lot of times when Big... Not saying that Dua Lipa is Beyonce level, but, like, when Beyonce had to perform at the Oscars, she didn't show up. She did it from the tennis courts. And
I think Dua Lipa would go to the Oscars.
No, I think they would have Dua show up.
Yeah, I mean, she's also in the movie, so...
Well, Dua's trying to, like, break into acting, so she has to get her name out there.
Okay, any last-minute Barbie thoughts before we wrap things up?
Oh, I actually... Well, I did write down, and we didn't touch on it, but I do want to know your opinions. Do you think this movie could have been made with the original... Or one of the original...
No.
Do you know what I'm going to say?
What's the question?
Can I guess what you're going to ask?
Know the you question. Can guess.
Do you think Amy Schumer's Barbie would have been... Is it Amy Schumer's Barbie? No. I don't see Amy Schumer... I mean... I'm not the biggest Amy Schumer fan. I don't think many of our listeners are. I don't see that movie being successful at all.
It's interesting, like, in timing that she got that right after Trainwreck, and just shows how Hollywood doesn't at times let things simmer down and actually pay attention to reactions rather than, you know, like, ooh, like, white lady made a big box office movie. Let's give her this. And I'm like, oh, God. So,
yeah.
That almost happened.
There's been so many iterations of different writers attached, different directors, different stars, and obviously you'll never know what could have happened with other ones, but I find it very hard to believe that a Margot Robbie produced, acted, and Greta Gerwig written, directed movie would be worse than any of the other iterations that came before this, which I think Warner Brothers also agrees with, because that's who they ended up going with. But anyway, Lexi, thank you so much for joining us on this podcast. Do you want to plug your Substack and all the other stuff you got going on?
Oh my God, yes, I would love to. I just started a Substack. It's called Seated. So give that a follow. It should be just at Lexi Shay, shaye.substack.com, I believe. And then it's linked there. If not, it's linked in my socials, which are at Lexi Shay, LexiShaye_ on Twitter and Instagram. You can probably find out my letterbox there as well. I do movie commentary shows now live in Brooklyn monthly that are nice. Free, that are really fun. Yeah, that's all I got right now.
Cool. New York listeners, go check out Lexi. I wish I could.
I wish I could still, too. I'm so next sad.
Someday.
I'll be back in New York soon. I'll come visit you and go to one of your shows. You can find me at Kate_Wyatt on Twitter, blit. You can't find me on Letterboxd, even though I have one, and I actively use it, because Michael said that he would just make me be, like, a server at, like, his bar or something.
He would bring patriarchy more into your life.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He would just, be a man, I guess.
Mike is not here, actually, right now, while the three of us record this Barbie podcast, because he's off thinking about the Roman Empire.
He's in Italy.
Mike is literally in Italy while the three women record the Barbie podcast. It's so funny. Anyway, You can find me on Twitter at MicroMirate. You can find me on Letterboxd at ShruthiMirate. And then you can follow the show on Twitter, Instagram, on Letterboxd. We are all at Chaos on the Set. You can shoot us an email at chaosonthesetpod@gmail.com. Send us your Barbie thoughts. We're about to be covering some spooky movies. We're going to do Clue in a couple of weeks if you have any thoughts on Clue. And then again, we are still covering Lost with our two first-time watchers. We are on track to record our podcast about Season 2, Episode 1 through Season 2, Episode 15, Halloween weekend. So if you're watching along with us, you have until Halloween to watch up until Season 2, Episode 15 of Lost and send us all of your thoughts there. Again, it's chaosonthesetpod@gmail.com.